Hello and welcome to Growth Coaching International's Coaching in Education podcast. I'm your host, Richard Reid, and in today's episode, we continue our mini-series, Stories from the Coaches, where I have the pleasure of talking to members of the GCI team in the search for some helpful insights into coaching in education. To kick things off in this episode, I want to refer to our strapline, where theory and good intentions meet reality, because the topic of discussion today, reflective practice, fits so well with this phrase. Let me explain. In theory, we as educators and coaches appreciate the benefits of a reflective approach to our practice, and we definitely have good intentions to make this a regular habit. However, the reality quite often is we let disciplines such as reflective practice drop off our list as the busyness of working in education takes over. In this episode, we aim to help you address this issue, and I'm so pleased to be joined by one of GCI's longest serving members, Di Henning. Di is the lead facilitator of Reflective Practice, a GCI process of group supervision for both in-school and open entry groups. As the lead consultant for coach development, Di also supports the learning and development of GCI consultants as supervisor, mentor and coach, in particular leading the in-house reflective practice process required for all GCI consultants. In 2021, Di received the GCI Mandy O'Brien Award in recognition for her contribution to people development. Di, I'm so pleased to have you join me on the podcast today.
Richard, I'm happy to be here.
Fantastic. Really looking forward to the conversation. Di, you've been with Growth Coaching International since 2006, so coming close to 20 years. So I'd imagine your role has changed and evolved over that time. Can you share with us an overview of your time with GCI and how that role has evolved into what you do today?
Yes, it's been interesting to reflect. So certainly I began working as both coach and facilitator of all of the Growth Coaching International workshops and programs. And, you know, I did that for many years and travelled all around the up and down the eastern coast of Australia, you know, doing programs. But I was mainly based in Tasmania doing that at the time. But on reflecting on it, I've thought, well, the learning, I suppose, was really the continuous theme through that through facilitating that, you know, being able to facilitate well, it took me into learning deeply about coaching so that not only was I practicing it, but I was continuously learning about coaching as well. And, you know, and through that process, I was even designing programs as, you know, as part of what I did, you know, obviously working with others, but it always takes you deeper into the learning. And I think that's the key thing that, you know, has been, you know, just a strong part of what I've done. And I've always been interested in, once we help people understand what coaching is about, how do we sustain that learning? How do we help them continue to coach well once they've done their initial training? So that's been something that's always interested me. I have to mention a sort of a key pivotal point in my, you know, the way I think about coaching was being involved with solution focused practice, coming across, as we all did, the work of Mark McCurgo and others who, you know, list too long to mention. But I did a course with Mark McCurgo, as others of my colleagues did, at the Uni of Wisconsin on solution focused practice. And that was very significant in my thinking, bringing, you know, that whole solution focus approach and future thinking to our work. That really had an impact on me. And that then I took into working with Annette Gray, working on reflective practice. And it's very much based on, let's explore coaching. Let's look at what we actually do and learn from that and think about what's working well and then think about what we might do differently. So that was a really strong impact on the way that shaped me. And then, of course, that led me from group supervision, which is what reflective practice is. It's a form of group supervision, to the work on individual supervision, and then moving to have my accreditation with the European Mentoring and Coaching Council as a coach supervisor. So that's now where I really find the focus of my work, still continuing to coach, but now a really strong focus on the sustaining of learning and sustaining practice, keeping true to the principles of coaching. So I think that really sums up sort of where I am today. Yeah.
Fantastic. It's amazing though to think, I mean, right from 2006, and to me, when I think of that period of time, you know, I could be guilty of thinking, goodness, Di has it all sussed. You know, she's been doing this for a long, long time. But yet, very clearly in your answer, you're very humble in many ways, because you've been continually learning all the way through that process. And I think that's good for people to hear that, you know, when you get into that position, it's an ongoing learning journey, even if you're doing the facilitating and doing the teaching. And you used a lovely word there, to explore coaching. And even after the length of time you've been involved in it, you're still exploring, which I think is a lovely place to be. If you're talking about exploring, you know, as part of the coach training team, you've obviously worked with numerous educators who are just new to coaching and would be very much at that exploratory stage. Is there one key coaching skill that you would encourage them to focus on most in those early stages of development?
I thought about this, ranged across the, you know, all the schools they are, and I cannot, Richard, say one. What I want to do is put listening and noticing together. I think it's working on our listening and simultaneously what we're noticing about the person we're working with, that and the noticing is so subtle. It's things we pick up. And it's been an interesting experience for me that now, as I work intensively with people who are learning coaching, it helps me see what I do know. And, you know, things you just kind of take for granted. I realize that if I'm watching them, I pick up things as I'm observing that, as, you know, as new coaches, they don't. And that makes me realize just how much I do pick up. And that's what helped me kind of shape this response, that what we pick up is, you know, is about the language the person's using. We're listening for that. You know, what are the words? What are we hearing? And we're looking, you know, what's their meaning? And, you know, we use clarifying to kind of, you know, to get greater clarity around that. But, you know, our listening is also about what's not said. And so and what I've come to realize is that the more you do this, the more focused you are on this part, then, you know, you just develop your skills, you become more acute. And why I think these are so important, the listening and noticing together, is that from that's what we use to calibrate our response. We can't ask it. We can't ask the right question. We can't ask an appropriate question. I don't think there is this. I don't like that word, the right question. What's an appropriate question? And we can't determine whether we want to paraphrase. That all comes from the listening and noticing. What's the response? So that's where I think, to me, is what we really need to focus on. Because you can have a good bank of questions beside you at the moment when you're beginning, which are totally adequate. But it's, you know, what do you actually deploy? If your listening is off, then what you do will be off.
I like that. And it's interesting when you paused before you answered that one. Very similar to Nikki Knight. When I interviewed Nikki, she decided, well, I'm going to break the rules. I'm not going to go with one. I have to go with at least two. So very similar to yourself, Diane. I love the fact that you've combined listening and noticing together, and used that word subtle, you know, noticing the subtle things, and very much all around vocabulary and language, you know, what the other person is actually saying and what's behind the words. But even more importantly there, noticing what's not said. Di, you've established a significant presence within coaching circles for your work in the area of reflective practice. Now, reflective practice for many educators and coaches is something that they think they understand, but the reality is that they're only scratching the surface. So I'd love you to take a bit of time and just walk us through what effective reflective practice looks, feels, and sounds like.
Well, I think it's helpful to remind ourselves that as humans, we are adaptive systems. now. All the writers and thinkers about systems will probably, you know, cringe when they hear me use the layman's description of what this is about. I mean, we know that we, you know, we adapt to like changes in our environment, to all sorts of things. You know, our body is built, we are built to be adaptive. But what we don't fully, I think, be conscious of is the process or how or the degree to which we are adaptive in our way of being and the way we operate, you know, as social beings, as interactive people. And so we are built to be able to change. And we adjust. So we have a process of self-evaluation, which is just going on continuously for us about all sorts of things. And essentially we're sort of affirming what's working and you continue doing it. Or if something we realize, that wasn't most useful, well, then we've got the capacity to, you know, to change. And so reflection is the process we have that enables us to do that. And it's an interesting phenomenon to me that it is so important to us. But I've often asked people when I've been chatting about this, can you think of a time in your whole professional life or any part of your life where you've ever engaged in any professional learning on how to reflect? Well, nobody offers anything. It just kind of doesn't exist. It's almost this assumption that we pick it up as we go along. And, you know, you hear people say, oh, it'll be really good to reflect on that, or you need to go away and reflect on that. And you think to yourself after a while, well, what exactly is it you're thinking, you're assuming they're going to do? And the other thing that you delve into, as you delve into this, you realize that some people have evolved, developed very sound, helpful, useful practices of reflection. And then occasionally you'll come across somebody who says, oh, I don't reflect. I don't see any point in reflecting. And it's, you know, it's just, I find it a really intriguing phenomenon. So to me, it is profoundly important because through reflection, it's about how we can adapt and change, how we learn and grow. So therefore, in my mind, it's very helpful to have some greater understanding about how exactly do we reflect. And that's what really intrigues me. I'm really intrigued about how we learn to be reflective and how we can enhance our reflective skillfulness, because it's a skill. And then, of course, it becomes how do we support others to actually become more helpfully reflective? Because I think you can be very unhelpfully reflective. It doesn't take you anywhere to a really useful place. And the interesting thing is we have ingrained habits that may not be the most useful. So therefore it becomes very interesting to kind of open it up and really see how we go about it. So that's what I'm interested in. So I thought that it would be helpful just to talk about two aspects of what it is we do in reflection. So the first thing is we use a framework to reflect with. So, for example, when we typically sort of suggest or think or reflect on something, the most common framework that people use is the good old deficit model. They go straight away, if they think about, you know, reflecting on something that's happened, what did I do well? Because the assumption is that reflection is about finding out what didn't work so you can fix it. And so that's the common frame. And, yeah, I mean, I had an experience very early in my coaching which really made that very clear to me. It made me think and realize, well, that is not helpful when people just go straight to that space, because it doesn't take them into kind of a sense of agency or efficacy. They're just kind of down there. So what do we do then to support people to be more constructive? And so it you know, and thinking through things from positive psychology, appreciative inquiry, which is what I was immersed in at the time, I began focusing on asking people questions about what's working and how and what makes that work. When you think about whatever's happened, you know, what do you feel really pleased about? What did you do then that you didn't think you possibly could do? And it's now working for you. So having a constructive frame and then going and asking, well, if you were to, you know, if you could do that again, what might you do differently? So that became, you know, a framework that I used very, you know, commonly. And then, of course, once I became immersed in solution-focused thinking, I could see, well, there was a whole lot more theory around that I could bring to that. But so that taught me that, you know, helping people be clear about how they would reflect, having a framework to use, a tool to use that was constructive and useful, became a key thing to help people understand. And of course, you know, that then becomes like a core concept of reflection. We can actually choose what framework we want to use to reflect with. And so in the literature now, you can find useful frameworks. So one framework that's used is the Gibbs model. It's talked about in one article we use in a program. And that begins with saying you should, you know, to begin with describing, you know, it can just be internal, what the event or the thing is you want to reflect about. Just describe it. But then interestingly, the next question they ask is, or put forward that you can ask is, well, what was your feeling about that? How did you feel about that? And I've had people comment to me when they've been exploring this, isn't it interesting to get you to think about just, well, how did that make me feel? What was I feeling there? And it brings in a different dimension, I've had people say to me. So, you know, I'm not going to go into the frame. I'm just sharing that that's one. Also, there's the work of a guy called Brookfield, and he was talking about teaching practice, and he developed this concept of lenses that you could look at whatever an event is or a situation you want to reflect on through different lenses. And so he used the lens of like your own experience, like how does this, what I've just done here or witnessed here or thought of thinking about that I've done, how does that fit my other experiences? Then looking at it from if you're participating with other people, say if you're a teacher in the class, well, what do the students think? If I'm a coach, I would ask the coachee, you know, what did you notice about what I did? So that, you know, helps me see from a different perspective. Or, you know, who if I'm working with colleagues, sharing things that, you know, I might think, well, what is it they would notice about me? Because they obviously know what I'm doing. So what would they see that perhaps the participant wouldn't see? And then also as another lens I can use is, well, what does research, what does literature tell me? If I think about this is my coaching, for example, you know, what's the lens of what literature might be saying or research would be saying? So that's a kind of a framework that Brookfield puts forward. And really there are, you know, there are any number of frameworks, or we can call them tools that support us to reflect. And so thinking recently of a group of leaders whom I work with doing some work on leadership, we got to talk about trust. And so they read an article about trust written by Dr. Paul Browning, who's an Australian who's done a lot of really interesting research on trust. He also has a rubric with 10 elements of trust, and the, you know, as a rubric is set up, the four, you know, four levels. So I pointed them to the rubric, and between two sessions that we did, I set them the task of using the rubric to reflect on what they saw themselves doing in terms of developing trust with the people they work with. So therefore, I was providing them with they were using a tool to reflect on trust building. So all sorts of things that we can, you know, we can bring in then to support us as a tool to reflecting on some aspect of our performance or our work. So there's that. And so the second thing I just thought I would mention is that over time, we refine, we evolve and refine picture of whatever it is that we are reflecting about. And that becomes a point of comparison. Because if you're reflecting, you're always looking at something you did, but how does this fit something? Is it good? Is it bad? I mean, how do you know? You've got to have some picture of what something is called the good that you can then make this comparison about. And so, for example, if we think about coaching training in our programs, very near the beginning of any of our programs, we do a coaching demonstration so that people go, oh, so that's what it looks like. They have, you know, they're forming, they have an initial formation of what they think coaching is or what we're helping them see coaching is. And we talk about it. What are the key things that you've noticed about that? So they then begin with that kind of picture. And it's very basic. You know, we make sure the really fundamental aspects of good coaching are evident. But the thing is, it's a beginning picture. And then as the learner learns more about whatever it is, teaching, you know, our coaching, then, and as we do things like we watch videos perhaps of other people coaching, or we might join group supervision, participating in individual supervision, their picture of therefore of what good coaching is evolves. It becomes, you know, more sophisticated, more complex, more nuanced. So that picture of what good, great coaching is, or good or great teaching, it evolves over time. And then our reflection, you know, we're reflecting in terms of, you know, our evolved picture of whatever it is. So, you know, if I think about me now, I spent time after a session yesterday really thinking about some subtleties of relationship building, because that came up as an aspect of the coaching that was happening, and how do I assist a person to to explore that, and what was I presenting about the way I build relationship? So, you know, the things that we're reflecting about, you know, are shaped by our own kind of evolved picture of what it is we're reflecting about. So it's different for all of us. So it's this concept of you just don't reflect in a vacuum. We just naturally evolve some picture of what it is we're trying to achieve. And that we can reflect kind of against, because otherwise what's telling you that something was good or even that something didn't work? You know, what do we use that helps us tell that? And that's the really interesting part, because you can become skewed if you're not really thinking about the useful elements of it. So I'm really intrigued by how we do that, and how we build those into our practice.
But I think that's really, it's really helpful, Di. And you mentioned at the start, trying to move people away just from that deficit model is the first step, because I think most of us would be in that position. So that's very clear. And then that there are options, there are frameworks out there. And I mean, you've given examples of a couple there, which are really helpful. And then that idea, I love that idea of an evolving picture, this ongoing, emerging, evolving picture of what you're hoping, you know, good could look like. So you have something to compare what you're doing now to. And I think that really is very helpful. It's one of those things where we prepare, you know, maybe before a coaching session, you know, we give it our best during the session, and sometimes afterwards we ignore or forget about the reflection. And the reflection is such a significant part of what we need to be doing as coaches. So I think that's just really helpful for the folks who are listening. Di, let's assume that your advice and your guidance on this topic of reflective practice is landing well with our listeners, and I'm sure it is. How might they ensure that they establish a habit of reflective practice so that it becomes a natural part of who they are as a coach or educator?
Yes. And there's no one simple answer, you know, because, you know, what's fascinating here is people do their reflection time, have reflection in all sorts of ways. So I remember one person, you know, and she said to me, look, she was a runner. And she said, I just do my best reflect. It's no point me sitting down after a coaching session and thinking, now I need to reflect on what did I do well then. She said, nothing will come to me. She said, but when I'm running, that's when my mind is free and I'll think about what I was pleased about, you know, what came up, what might I want to, you know, whatever the way of thinking is. But that's when I will do some of my best insightful reflecting. Now, you see, this also fits into work, you know, how our brains function too. And it's true with me. I will do some of my best reflecting when I'm doing things like the ironing, or digging, you know, weeding the garden, pruning, things like that. When I'm deeply in doing something like that, my mind is free and I find that's when sort of insightful ideas come to me about what I'm doing. The practice part, I think, is that really your question is about what is the practice we need to have that enables us to be mindful of our reflections and maybe keeping track of, you know, how do we be conscious of them? How do we consciously build our practice of coaching, teaching, whatever it is, but coaching in our case we're talking about here. And so, yes, there does need to be some time when we have a habit of capturing that in some way. And that's what I think, you know, people need to know what is most helpful for them. But I would say the key thing is you need to have an element of conscious time. So is it for some people, it's straight after a coaching session, they might capture something. Other people might decide that it's, you know, at the end of the day and they've done several coaching sessions, or is it at the end of the week? Certainly there's a great chapter in a book called Good to Great Coaching by a guy called David Peterson. And, you know, he really says that great coaches, they definitely have, at, you know, times when they're conscious of and setting goals for themselves. So that can be helpful. It can also be like reflecting when you've read something. Now, I've got a book here that I'll mention at the end, and a colleague of mine, you know, she was sharing with us that when she read this book, clearly she was using this book to the ideas in it to reflect upon her coaching. And so then she did some journaling and thinking, you know, writing down key thoughts that emerged from the book. So I'm not giving one simple, clear answer here. I think you have to have a conscious practice of being able to use your own work to emerge your ideas, your insights about your coaching, and thinking through, well, what do I do? What does that help me see I want to do into the future? And however it works for you, of being able to bring that consciousness to your learning so it transfers into your practice. Some people love to write loads of things down. Other people like to just jot a few ideas. And it's whatever it is that it really supports you as a learner, but it has to be there in some form.
I think that's a really helpful answer, Di, to be honest with you. And I think people will be relieved when they hear it's different for different people. And I go back to the word you've used earlier on the conversation is it's about exploring what works well for you as an individual, trying things out, making mistakes, seeing where as you use the phrase, when your mind is most free, when you are going to be in the best place to reflect. That might be immediately after the session, and for some people they're thinking right now, yes, that's me. Or it could be like your colleague who's out running. And that's when her mind is in the best possible place to reflect. And that's only after exploration, you know, taking a bit of time to see. But as you say, it still has to be a key integral part of who you are as a coach, and you need to be intentional. Di, in the true sense of reflective practice, because that's our theme for today, do you see an emerging picture of where coach training is heading in the next few years? Is there a next big thing coming up for coaching and education? What are your thoughts?
Oh, yeah, that's really interesting. I have to tell you an amusing story that Chris and Claudia have shared. They've been to Singapore and they were talking to somebody from who was very, very senior. Maybe he was the president, I'm not sure, but very, very senior in ICF. And he shared with them that ICF has realised that the next trend in coaching is coaching in education, to which they kind of fell about, going, well, we've been coaching in education for 21 years as a company. So, look, one trend is about supervision. Individual supervision has moved now, thanks to technology, very much into recording, videoing coaching, and then working individually with a supervisor to explore that. Some people think that mentoring and coaching are polar opposites. Great mentoring uses most, if all, of the skills of great coaching. And particularly, certainly here in Australia at the moment, in the realms where I'm working, there is much change in teachers in schools. Staff are not stable anymore, the staff of a school. People are moving, and there is a great need to mentor people. And so I see how we bring coaching into that, in a way, because people are changing, and so you need very rapidly, like midterm, to support a new teacher to be effective. So I think that really helping people understand how you can bring coaching into that, I think that is a really significant thing that's going to happen, that will become more and more important. Certainly, I'm talking to, you know, people, principals, leaders in schools about that, how they do that well. Another element is, in the pressured world that exists, how do we support people's well-being in a coaching way? And I'm not talking about self-care. I mean a holistic perspective on well-being and how coaching moves more into that space. Because there's an assumption that coaching in schools, rightly, is about focusing on your instructional practice. How can you be a whole person to be able to teach well? And I'm not talking about, you know, needing to go to therapy, but is around, you know, elements of well-being related to how you do your work, how you feel about your work. There are elements of that that enable us to flourish in the workspace. And so helping people understand, like as I talked to somebody recently, that it's totally legitimate to be coaching somebody around those elements that support them to be flourishing so that they can teach well. And I think that's really important. So to build the capacity of in-school coaches or people working, you know, in the coaching space with educators, then that's when, to me, individual supervision and helping individuals work in that space becomes more important, because it's a different, it's somewhere different to talking about instructional practice, but yet, you know, it enables people to be effective in their work, focusing on the holistic view of well-being.
That's fascinating, and sort of the angle you've taken on that, Di. And I even like, I mean, the word you used in there was flourishing, you know, helping our educators and our leaders to flourish in their role. And if coaching, mentoring, and that fusion between the two can have an impact on that, then I think we're hitting the nail right on the head. You know, that's what we're in schools to do, to help educators to flourish and thrive in the role. So that's very helpful and very encouraging, I think, as well, as we look into the future for coach training. As a final and closing thought, Di, are there any specific resources or articles or books, etc., that you would recommend now, either for reflective practice or just developing coaching skills in general, would be really helpful?
There is a book on reflection coming very soon from our wonderful colleague, Christian van Nieuwenberg, and that will be published before the end of this year. So people should look out for that. So there will be a book on reflective practice. So that's coming. But the ones that I just couldn't help but put forward would be Hey Sun Moon's book, Coaching A to Z, which is based on solution-focused theory and practice. A book by Claire Norman called The Transformational Coach, which is one I've just come across recently, and that has got some, you know, interestingly, different perspectives to what some people might have come across, which I found really interesting. And then I did put Christian Van Nieuwenberg's Advanced Coaching Practice book, you know, as something that, you know, as people get into coaching in schools really well and want to challenge themselves, then that's going to stretch them further.
I think it's just useful, you know, to give folks some, you know, practical pointers as to things that, you know, tangible things that they can lift, you know, and actually use to find out some further information. Di, for me, this conversation has been such a pleasure, and one that I have genuinely been really looking forward to. I'd like to thank you for giving us your time today to share your thoughts and insights on reflective practice. It's a subject that you're clearly very passionate about, and I'm sure that passion will have carried across to our listeners today. It certainly has inspired me. For our listeners, if you want to find out more about reflective practice or indeed any other aspect of coaching, please do take some time to browse through the GCI website. And do also check out our monthly Coach Ed update and twice yearly Digital Insights magazine. I've been your host today, Richard Reid, and I'd love it if you could join me again on the next episode of Coaching in Education, where theory and good intentions meet reality.